Yes, we are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. John Wall doesn't need no introduction. It's an insider's look at the NBA and culture surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick of the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late-night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The I Am Rappaport Stereo podcast. Live.
You down with Rappaport? Yes, I am. You down with Rappaport? Yes, I am. You down with Rappaport? Yes, I am. You down with Rappaport? Yes, I am.
You better tune in, iamrappaport.com. Cause every single podcast, you know he drops bombs. I seen him on set, a seasoned vet with true talent. Catch him on his way to CrossFit, rocking the new balance. He asked me to do the track cause he know I rhyme elite. But I'm just waiting for the Robert De Niro
line of the week.
Breakfast of champions, toasted bagel, cream cheese and lox. This is I Am Rappaport, the show never stops. You might catch him out in public, stretching his knees. But if you don't listen to the show, yo, wigga please.
Wigga please.
This is the Podcast.
All right, so the other day was my birthday, and the next day, two of the best hip-hop producers of all time share the same birthday. Large Professor and DJ Premier.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that their birthday, it makes sense.
Right, these two funky cats.
Musical. I mean, these are musicians.
Right.
So we're going to do a little thing to tribute, give a little tribute to them. Happy birthday shout out to both of them, Large Professor and DJ Premier. And I want to do my five favorite Large Professor beats and Moody.
Yeah.
You do your five favorite.
I only got three, but I'll help you out.
Okay. Well, what does that mean?
I'm going to give your ass three.
Okay, well then I'll. You only got three fucking beats that you could give the great Large Professor?
No, these are my three favorites, like the best that I like.
Oh, but you can't do five?
Nah.
Okay, all right. Okay, go.
Oh.
You're up. Do one, I'll do one.
Come Clean.
Mm.
You know?
Little Dap.
J. Rue.
Oh, J. Rue.
Yeah, with that like water torture type shit.
That's one of the illest fucking beats ever.
Yeah, yeah. And the way the drums is chopped up too.
The way it came in with that do do do.
Yeah.
Do do do.
That was crazy.
You want up? What? Yeah, man.
That's a classic.
Fucking banger.
Yes.
If you want to prove to me you could rhyme, just get on that beat.
Yeah,
that's like that should be easy pickings for any MC.
Yo.
I'm gonna go first. My first favorite beat by Large Professor, because I have sentimental reasons,
right,
is Halftime by Nas. The reason why I say Halftime by Nas, first of all, ill song.
Of course.
Ill beat.
Yeah.
Opening credits to the first time you ever saw me, Michael Rapaport. I had to make it about myself. No. Mm-hmm. First time opening credits of Zebrahead, you hear the song Halftime by Nasty Nas.
Mm-hmm.
And starts off Nasty Nas in your area. Produced by the great Large Professor. All right, what's your second favorite beat?
New York, State of Mind.
One of the best songs ever.
With that piano and that them Cool in the Gang NT drums all chopped up. Hard as fuck.
That shit is fucking... It really exemplifies. There's been a lot of songs that have had New York in it. That captures that time in hip-hop and what the city was like in regards to hip-hop.
Yeah.
And the culture and what was going on in the streets. Literally, like, it was grimy. It was uplifting. It was funky. It was moving.
Yeah. You're right. And that's what came out. Like, everybody was hyped up for Nas for that first album, right?
Oh, the hype was crazy.
Everybody was just like, yo, he was picking producers, picking beats, right? And that's what came out. So everybody was happy. We was satisfied with that.
You know, the thing about Large Professor, he was producing for Kool G Rap and Polo and Eric B and Rakim when he was like 16, 17 years old. Like, I had the pleasure of interviewing him when I was doing the Beats, Rhymes, and Life, the Travels of A Tribe Called Quest. And a lot of his stuff, like everybody in the film, got cut out. He told me some fucking stories, man, during that gave me the goosebumps.
Damn.
And he's such a good storyteller because it doesn't get more New York and more hip-hop than Large Professor.
Yeah.
Listening to that dude talk, he could fucking, like, he could literally, like, read a menu from, like, your diner, and he's going to make it sound good. The way he speaks, right. The way he emphasizes all his shit.
Word.
So, I'm going to go with... Now, I'm trying to find... I heard he produced this, but I'm assuming he produced this because, you know, they say it was uncredited. I'm sure there might have had some other hands in it, but I got to go with In the Ghetto by Eric B. and Rakim. Mm. That's a fucking banger.
24 Karat Black sample with the Bill Withers drums.
Mm.
Kissing My Love.
One of my favorite lines. When I had sex, I left my name on next.
Mm.
My trademark was left throughout the projects. That's one of my favorite lines.
Short and sweet. Rakim is like that.
That's a motherfucker. All right, what's your third? You're doing five. You're doing five. You got to do five. It's their birthday.
It's so many good ones,
okay, you
man.
Can do five. You can do five.
Speak Your Clout
mm.
with J.Ru, Lil Dap, and the late Guru.
Mm.
Yo, he just, man, the way he makes... You see, but one thing, like, I want to hark back to, yo, all of his shit is funky.
Mm.
You see? Because this is funk.
And this is a musician. This is, like, when he's bleeding through his beats, his production, this is a piece of his soul.
It speaks for itself. Yo, it ain't just looping. Yo, if you know these records, you can appreciate the artistry and how he... is stripping shit down and building it back up and fashioning it to fit.
Mm.
That's the art of sampling. It ain't just looping.
My third favorite song produced by Large Professor, and we're going off the dome here, just a friendly game of baseball.
Oh, yeah.
When he did it for Main Source. Extravagant production.
Yeah.
Extravagant production. That song is timeless.
Yeah.
The production is incredible. Main Source, if you've never heard the Breaking Adams album,
get it.
And just don't fuck with it. Just play it on a loop
play it for a day. Yeah.
Don't fuck with it. This is not one of these albums where it needs to be touched. That is one of the perfect albums that doesn't get talked about. Just get that fucking album.
Yep.
Okay. Number three. No, you're on number four?
You're on four.
I'm on four for Large Pro.
Yeah.
It's kind of a simple beat. It never gets old. Ever. Never, ever, 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 ever gets old. Classic. Live at the Barbecue. Main Source.
Wow.
He produced that shit.
beautiful.
He's like a scientist.
Yo,
he got the glasses, the afro.
Yo, I heard what's special. I heard those records. I heard the drums. I heard where them shits come from. Yo, he made them shits sound harder.
Right.
And amped them up. So it's like special when I hear, because I know what it is, man. That's art, man.
We gotta get him on the goddamn podcast. We gotta get him. We gotta start getting more people on here. I would love to sit down with Large Pro. He told me a story about producing for Rakim. And I don't want to do the whole story, but I'll just say this. He said when he came into the studio, he took out his beepers. He took out his cell phones. He had a couple of them. This is when the cell phones were like gigantic and when not everybody had the cell phone. Right. So it would be like if somebody had like, you know, I don't know, an iPhone like 12.
Yeah.
Like no one had cell phones. Like you're like, oh, shit. And then he said he had a red sweatsuit on. And then he said Rakim took his rhyme book out of his jacket in a Ziploc bag.
Damn.
And I was like, I remember what he told me that gave me the fucking goosebumps because I was like, of course.
Right.
Of course Rakim's rhyme book is in a Ziploc.
Yeah, he cares.
It should be locked in a vault in the Smithsonian.
Word. My number four for premiere is Freddie Fox. Bumpy Knuckles came out, I think this came out 99.
Yup.
It's part of my life. The song is called, yo, he made this thing. It's like obscure. You don't really know it, but the production, he made a bass line from the sample, but you have to hear it to understand what he did. Like a bass line from out of nothing.
It's so extravagant.
Yeah. It was ill, man.
All right. I'm not going to argue with that. I'm going to do my last five. I'm going to do two. And I could go on and on and on about Large Professor, but I was thinking I want to do, it's a song that, it was just like a one-off, and I remember it came out of nowhere, Faking the Funk on the White Men Can't Jump soundtrack, produced by Large Professor. Mm. You're faking the funk, talking that extra large shit, you're probably a punk.
But you just said that though, right?
I didn't say Faking the Funk, I said Live at the Barbecue.
Oh yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yo, that's a motherfucker right there.
Yeah.
And then also, yo, he produced so much shit with Tribe. Like there was shit he did with Tribe that, like, I'm sure him and Q-Tip, like, you know, they shared credits on. You know, Midnight Marauders, his fingerprints are all on that.
Right, right.
Extra P.
Funky.
So that's my top five. You got one more to go. I know there's a lot to pick.
I got one.
Okay, for premiere.
For premiere is one of my favorites.
Okay,
it's when I first started to hear this cat. DJ Premier is in deep concentration.
Mm.
Nice, jazzy. I think the sample is Ramsey Lewis.
Mm.
But that, when I heard that, that's the first album. That's like 90. I was like, yo, this guy loves it.
And he did so much. He did shit for, both of them did stuff. Premier did stuff with Big, Showbiz and AG.
Yeah.
I know Large Pro did that couple of joints with DITC and all those. We're not fact checking. MOP. Yeah. He's got his hands all over MOP.
Group Home.
I mean, Kicking the Door, I think he did for Biggie. And he did KRS when MCs Act Like You Don't Know.
Yeah.
One of his best songs.
Yeah.
One of his best songs. So happy birthday to both of those dudes. Yeah. We only touched the surface of what you did. Open invitation to the I Am Rapaport Stereo Podcast. Nothing but so much respect to both of you. Keep doing it. Keep it boom bappy. Keep it funky. And what?
Stay in our lane.
Yeah. Stay in your lane.
But that's our lane.
They created it.
Yeah.
And we'll be back. I always love watching games. I always love watching movies at home. And I love watching movies with my kegerator. While we podcast, we always have some fresh beer and wine on tap with my personal kegerator. A kegerator dispenses draft beer and keeps it chilled, turning your office, garage, game room, man cave into a brewery or bar equivalent. It's the same quality as the best bars and breweries. Nice head, crisp, and cold, delicious beers, but without going out. Beer stays fresh up to 90 days. That's 3 months. Dual tap, so you could have two kinds of beer. You can have cold brew, you can have wine, even cocktails. That's dual tap, two sides of the kegerator, so a guy and the woman in their life can get what they want. Everyone's happy. A lot of sporting events coming up, March Madness, baseball, NBA playoffs. It's not too late. Collect kegerators delivered in just a couple of days. Save 20% off my favorite kegerator. Kegerator.com is already a great value, but I've talked them into giving an amazing exclusive offer just for the listeners of the Ian Rapoport Stereo Podcast, because I love it and I know you will too. Plus, you'll receive four premium pint glasses, plus free shipping. This is an incredible deal, and it's for, just for my listeners, but only if you use my code Rapoport, R-A-P-A-P-O-R-T. Just go to Kegerator, K-E-G-E-R-A-T-O-R.com. Click on the microphone at the top and enter the promo code Rapoport. That's R-A-P-A-P-O-R-T. Click on the microphone and use my code. Don't wait. This is an amazing offer, and it's only for my listeners. Trust me, the Kegerator has changed my entire living situation. All right, and now enough with that. Let's get an interview with a great, great MC, friend of the Ian Rapoport Stereo Podcast. Said he might come back as a recurring guest. Brooklyn MC, champion MC, Talib Kweli. I was in a Talib Kweli video. Look it up online. I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you what it is. I'm in a Talib Kweli video, two-stepping my ass off. What?
It's time for Happy Hour with Michael Rapoport, live from Austin, Texas. Tune in studios at South by Southwest.
All right, this is Michael Rapoport. We're live at South by Southwest. If you don't know who I am, you might not know me as Michael Rapoport. You might only know me as
White Mike.
White Mike or the Gringo Mandingo. Mm-hmm. I'm with my partner, G Monetti.
That's right.
G Moody.
That's right.
And MC.
E-O.
Champion MC.
Word.
At this point, you're a champion MC. I'm not saying you're the champion MC. I don't want to put that on you. Right. But you are a champion MC.
Upper echelon.
Thank you.
Upper echelon.
Thank you.
Talib Kweli.
BK.
From Brooklyn, New York.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
World traveler.
Oh, they listening. I got fans.
Twitter heavyweight champion. Let's get into that first, because, you know, Kweli, out of
the world. Out of world.
I've known you.
I shook the world in 63.
Yo, Kwa. I've known you now for probably like 12, 15 years.
Yeah, a long time.
I feel like that, you know, and you travel, I travel. But your Twitter game is no joke. Like, so sometimes I'll see you just go on rants, this is coming from someone who I get into Twitter shit too.
Yeah, but see.
You are on another planet. Like, and you know, I don't know if you remember this. I can't remember what concert we were backstage at. You're the first person to tell me about Twitter.
Okay.
We were backstage. I was in the midst of the Tribe Called Quest stuff, and making the film, finished the film. And I saw you backstage at some show, something with The Roots or Questlove or somebody. And you started telling me about Twitter, and I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And now you're on there. You're like a grappler on there. So what's up with your, do you regret some of the stuff you say? Do you ever like feel like, oh crap, why did I say that? Where's your Twitter head at?
Well, you know, Twitter, I don't say anything. I don't speak on things that I don't know about.
Right.
So that limits the regrets. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I only speak on things that I either know in my head to be completely true because of data and not just because of anecdotes. A lot of times on social media, people talk and use anecdotes as proof of things. Well, I know something happened to my cousin, so it must be true, or this guy did this. So with me, I love the art of debate because I'm an MC. Because I'm an MC, I love the challenge, you know what I'm saying, of going back and forth. It's iron sharpening iron, you know what I'm saying? It makes my mind sharp. It makes me think quicker. And I'm writing in couplets as an MC. So on Twitter, it's like, you know, 140 characters. It make a lot of sense. But, you know, really, you see me on there because I be just, you know, killing time, you know, just enjoying the conversation.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? A lot of those conversations needed to be had. And I enjoy being able to, maybe a little bit too much, and this is where my ego might come in. I enjoy being able to not have to be polite to someone who show up, who choose to tweet me some bullshit.
Right. I understand.
You know, like someone who choose to tweet me some, you know, white genocide shit.
Right.
Someone choose to tweet me some misogynist just out the blue.
Mm-hmm. Are you surprised? Not that. Well, I'll ask you this. Are you surprised by the racism on Twitter?
Nah.
Taken aback by it?
No. I think that...
Because you must get it crazy.
Yeah, you know what? I've become a magnet for people who want to see if they could push racist agendas. People who want to defend racism and justify racism.
Right.
I've become someone on Twitter that people come to and be like, whoa, you know what I'm saying? Which is interesting to me because that's not what my intention was at all. But am I surprised by it? No, I mean, this country has never dealt honestly with the history of its racism and the history of its oppression. Mm-hmm. So people are miseducated about it. People don't have the proper context and information. They only are the anecdotes. They only see what's right in front of them. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, all my friends is black and they let me say nigga. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Like that, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It just becomes a series of experiences pieced together as data.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And you know, I'm not about the anecdotes.
Right, right. Okay. So, Kwali, let me just throw some topics. I don't have all day with you.
Hey, man, I'm here. I'm chilling, man.
Okay, okay.
I just got off a plane
Good.
To South Africa, and it was a 25-hour flight.
Are you serious?
And I just did a show, and shout out to Flatbush Zombies, and we going to the Sean Price thing tonight.
Yes.
And we going to the...
Sean Price. Whoa.
You know what I'm saying? We going to the Just Blaze thing tonight.
Yes.
Because we go hard.
You know the spots.
Hip-hop.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Hey, this is my home, man. I make South by Southwest my...
Okay, you settle down. This is my first time down here.
Me too.
So, all right, so you mentioned Sean Price and you mentioned your 25-hour flight. First, Sean Price, it's his birthday today.
Yeah.
Great rapper, Brooklyn MC. Who is Sean Price? How do you know him? Why has there been such an outcry of praise, respect as an MC?
Yeah.
I feel like he's like one of the most... talented MCs that the majority of people, and I always say it's okay to say you don't know him or you don't know his. I want more people to know who he is.
Yeah.
But like, you know, he sort of reincarnated himself with a Sean Price Brokest Rapper Alive thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, he was in. So talk about Smith. Talk about who is Sean Price?
Yeah, Sean Price to me, you know, growing up in Brooklyn, I have a very special relationship with Duck Down, the Boot Camp Click, and Helter Skelter. You know, they came out after Black Moon, after Smith & Wesson, but Ruck and Rock together, that when they came with Helter Skelter, when they came with, you know, that album, like, it was crazy. And then they came with the Fab Five, with OGC. The OGCs, and original the La Flamme, La Fleur. They just embodied and epitomized the New York style of rap, that Brooklyn style of rap. You know what I'm saying? That wearing Timberland style. Like, people wear Timberlands to this day because of that, because of people like Sean Price. Now, back then, he was Ruck.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But then, you know, Duck Down had a situation where they left the major label and they became independent.
Right.
And as they became independent, it was Sean Price who, that's his real name.
Right.
He stopped calling himself Ruck.
Professionally.
Yeah, he started calling himself Sean Price and started putting out independent records that was a lot more closer to the vest, a lot more honest about the situations that rappers go through.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And people related that on a level where they relate to an MF Doom or a Mad Lib. So it became like a cult following type of situation.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
And have you ever seen him do Porn Stars?
No.
Yeah, Google Sean Price go on Porn Stars and try to sell the rock that his uncle threw at Martin Luther King. You know what I'm saying?
He was a funny, dude Witty. With such a personality.
But he was real. Like, Sean Price is from the hood. Sean Price is D-Cep.
That's
what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. Sean Price D-Cep. So it's
explain
not,
what that is to
no
people.
Game.
Like, when like, you hear people like Decepticon,
yeah,
Brownsville, like, Sean Price was a real dude, but he had such a sense of humor with his music when he did, when he came at the reincarnation, when he was Sean Price. The humor, I felt like he was a rapper, like if I could rap, I would rap like that, because he didn't say he was good, he was punchliney, but he had a self-effacing sense of humor.
Yeah. That's right.
Absolutely.
And I feel like it's just a shame that he never really got over that hump of being more known, and then... It's just
but
a shame.
You know what? It's like, you know, things happen for a reason.
Right.
And, I think he did what he was supposed to do. Like, he got a record where they did the video. They did a tribute video where he's like, my man, from Brooklyn Academy. And it's like the record is so prophetic.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He's talking about how he messed up his career. You know what I'm saying? It's like... And he didn't really mess up his career.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's not like he fucked it up.
Right.
Things happen.
Right.
You know, but I think his legacy, more than anything, is how it was supposed to be.
Right.
I think he was still supposed to be in the hood with the construction job.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's not no saying that anybody...
Who does that, yeah.
Yeah, that's not, like, what I do, is working class.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm part of a working class of MCs.
Gotcha.
I'm not a rich man.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I go out here, I make my money, I feed my family. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I've been blessed with situations. I've been blessed with Black Star. You know what I'm saying? I've been blessed with certain situations where I had major record label deals.
Right.
I had people invest millions of dollars to make sure my billboards was everywhere. You see my face everywhere.
Right.
Sean Price never had that.
Right.
So he achieved the same level of respect in the game without having the marketing. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. This is why I like talking to you, Quali. Yeah. Because you're articulate, smart.
And you, hip, you learn.
Yeah, you break it down good. Yeah. And you got one of the illest voices in hip-hop. I, like, your voice, I remember when you first came out with Black Star. And I remember me and my man here, we were in Minnesota when that record dropped. And I remember we were in like a Sam Goody or a Tower Records in Minnesota. I was like, oh, that's the Black Star. Yeah. I'd heard, been hearing
but
about
I had,
it.
But I had bought an album or 12-inch and Fat Beats.
Right. Shout out to Fat Beats.
Of Black Star?
Yeah. Of, no, of him.
Oh, of Quali.
Yeah.
Fortify Live.
That's right. Yeah.
When you guys came out, like, your voice, like, I always equated your, like, your voice always reminded me so much, especially when you were younger, of Fife. It had that town crier. It's not like, you know, it's not like a ooh, ooh, ooh. And, like, and just, and like, always, like, you know, equated you and Moses, Black Star.
You just made me think of that film with Questlove.
Yes.
Like, tips very smooth. Fife is very high.
Yeah.
Shout out to B Tribes in Life, The Travels of a Tribe Called Quest, which Quali got cut out of because when I interviewed him, another technical difficulty.
Oh, what? Oh.
So his whole interview was like, there was like some music.
That's
like,
okay.
He should have been in it.
Because you're going to have to do the documentary on me one day.
Of course, man. Word. Of course, man.
Shout out to Questlove. You know what I'm saying? That's a good dude right there. He lost his father today, Lee Andrews. Rest in peace, Lee Andrews. You know, Questlove he's the person who introduced me to Twitter. He said, Quali, you got to get on Twitter. I said, what's Twitter? He said, it's perfect for you. And he told me that three times before I got on.
And now a million followers later.
Damn.
Shout out to Questlove.
All right, so what were you doing in South Africa? You were in South Africa. Had you ever been to South Africa before? 25-hour flight?
Yeah, it was because I had to come to Austin, and I had to get here by a certain time. So I had to pick the flight that worked. You know
okay.
Right. Like, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, I've been to South Africa many times.
Performing and stuff?
Yeah, I performed several times.
What was the thing that you were most surprised, impressed about when you've performed in South Africa? And when you're performing in South Africa, are you like, I cannot believe that hip-hop has taken me this far? Like, you got to bug out with that, right?
Yeah. I went to South Africa in 2001 with Black August. Myself, Boots from the Crew, Black Thought from the Roots, J. Rooted Damage. Mm. We went out there. We did a Dead Prez. We went out there. We went to the racism conference where Colin Powell had walked out of the racism conference.
Oh.
We went to Durban. We went to Joburg. We went to Cape Town. The tickets was too expensive. Mm-hmm. So Stickman from Dead Prez, he was like, we're going to perform in the streets for free. We went to Soweto. You know what I'm saying? Like, wow. We performed in the streets for free. Went to Nelson Mandela crib.
Wow.
Winnie Mandela crib.
Are you serious?
Yeah, this was 2001. Black August. Dream Hampton was there. Rosa Clemente
was there.
You know, that was a beautiful thing. Shout out to Malcolm X Grassroots Movement because they took me there. They took me to Cuba. We went to Cuba.
Right.
Wow.
We performed at the Cuba Hip Hop Festival. That's Asada. You know what I'm saying?
That's crazy, man. Yeah. All right, so this trip, I got to ask, did you see Yasiin Bey, a.k.a. Mos Def?
Yeah, that's why I went.
Okay, so how is Mos Def?
Oh, he's great. He's grand, man. He out there with his family. He out there working on art, working on music. Shout out to Ferrari Shepherd. They got a website, a country called Earth.
Okay.
And that's where Mos is. Yasiin is really releasing a lot of his music and his art. He was out there painting.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
really?
Yeah. He's out there painting.
He's doing it. He's doing it.
He's being an artist.
He's like an artist, right?
He separated himself completely from the music industry.
He's not making music?
He's making music, but he separates himself from the industry.
Right. People get disenchanted with that.
Yeah.
And the music industry is just... It's just
like the film industry.
But I feel like the music industry just... I mean, that... I don't want to curse so much, but that's Sean Parker. Is that his name? That Napster guy? He's responsible for all this. He's the one that did this.
He's Sean Parker is somebody...
He set it off.
Sean Parker proved that the emperor has no clothes. You know what I'm saying? He proved that it's just smoke and mirrors. You know what I'm saying? That's what he did. And he was able to take advantage of flaws in the system.
Right.
No doubt.
These guys may be the last duo.
Yeah.
That really...
Black Star. One of
right?
The, is the there, last are, duo. Are we forgetting another duo that came after Black Star?
The last Little Brother.
Who?
That was three people.
Who?
Little Brother.
Right. They were good.
That was three. That was three.
They were good. They were good.
But I'm talking about like EPMD, like that type of duo.
See now you can making a black man blush. I'm talking about put me in a category with EPMD.
Yo, that's what I'm saying. You're like
Quali,
the torch was passed.
Yo, you can have perspective. I'm not gonna say you should own that. But yo, you have to have perspective on it now. Right. It's like that album and what you did individually and what you continue to do individually
ranks
and what
most up.
It you know, I was thinking about, and I wasn't thinking about it in regards to you, but I was thinking the other day of like, I want to do a playlist of full albums that are top to bottom albums that you could truly listen to,
right?
Top to bottom. Like,
I did that on my Tumblr page.
Can I get it? Can I get a link or something?
Yeah, if you just Google Talib Kweli top 25 albums of all time.
Okay, what are some of them on there? I don't expect you to remember
five.
All of them. Give me five of them that are on
that's
there.
Okay, like albums. Okay, because I did a singles. I did top hip-hop songs. I did 100 hip-hop songs. And I did... Those numbers might not be accurate. This was a long time ago.
Is this on, but, let me, is this on Tumblr?
Albums.
Wait, so I want to help the people listen. This is on Tumblr.
This is on my Tumblr. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's the albums.
Give me five of them. We know you've been on a fight for
albums.
25
it was,
hours.
It was Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back.
Okay.
I was on there. Reasonable Doubt.
Okay.
Illmatic.
Okay. Illmatic, yo. I got to tell you, as time goes on,
it ages well.
Right. Oh, yes. Mecca and the Soul Brothers.
Oh, P-Rock and CL Smooth.
Great samples, great beats.
Freestyle Fellowship, Inner City Griots was on there.
I got to be honest with you. I don't know that album well.
I heard
Should
it
I know it well?
It depends. I don't. I kind of know your hip-hop.
You know my taste.
I know your hip-hop.
Am I cynical? I'm a cynical hip-hop guy.
Yes, you are.
And you know what I like?
Yes, I have an idea.
I like that boom bap.
Yeah. See, Freestyle Fellowship is a jazzy hip-hop album.
Okay, but
it appeals to my sensibilities. Right.
But I'm under that jazz, though. Right. I rock with my jazz. I did spend 3 years of my life pulling my hair out, making a record on Tribe.
Yes.
So, the jazz.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what do you like?
But what do I like? What?
Boom Bap?
Yeah, he likes...
I like Boom Bap, but I mean, jazz...
He likes Mobb Deep.
No, but I mean...
And Wu-Tang and...
But Illmatic... Illmatic,
that's in that...
That's a jazz album. That's a mixture of every
category.
Black Large Moon, Professor. Into the Stage.
You know what? Breaking Adams is on my list.
Of
Black... Yeah, yes, that's a great album.
Of
yeah. All right, so in terms of that Boom Bap, that sound, I'm not even a gangster rap dude. Like, I'm like more like... If I had to say my albums, I would say Midnight Marauders. I would say right. Black Star. I would say
Midnight Marauders is
perfect.
Is the pop version of Low End Theory.
Explain. Expound.
Awesome. Is Low End Theory is that Charlie Mingus shit, like that Ron Carter, that like that Low End Theory. Like you have to really know about music to get it. So even Sky Pager and Everything Is Fair is a great record.
I don't like. I've never liked. But compared to everything else on the record,
and then the Sky Pager, that's some Ron Carter, Charlie Mingus, jazz bassline.
Right.
So it was in the theme of the record. But what they did with Midnight Marauders, see, with Low End Theory, they blew up, and they were able to tour. They were already touring, but with Low End Theory, they had some hit records. Yeah. Can I Kick It? I think.
Right.
No, that was on the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Can I Kick It was on People's Instinctive.
Right.
Yes.
But they had Butter and Jazz and these records.
And Check the Rhyme.
You know what I'm saying?
And these, Scenario.
Yeah, these records went crazy.
Right.
Album went platinum.
Yeah.
So now they touring, they touring the world, and they on stage now. Now they on arena stages.
Right.
So they're like, oh, we could do what we do, but just make it more accessible.
Right.
Make it more... I'm not going to say glossy because not glossy about it, but it's brighter. It's brighter. It's more fun sounding.
Right, right.
Like Midnight Marauders is like, it's got a lot of. It's tight, man.
Man, it's a good
tight.
Record.
Absolutely,
it's tight.
Yeah. When you're making a record, how many? Let me ask a question. If you had to give a guesstimate, or maybe you know for sure, how many songs do you think you've made in your career where they're your own Black Star
songs guest
that never
joints? Came out?
No. Songs that have come out.
Songs that come out, thousands.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I have a couple thousand songs that have come out. Yeah.
So when you're making a song, and you're like, whether it's a Talib Kweli song or a guest on someone else's song, how aware of you, how much perspective are you on how, is this is a special song? Like when you're making Get By, which is arguably the biggest Kweli song, would you say?
Yes.
I mean, it's a beautiful song.
Did you feel it that it would be that?
For your question, that record is a great example because without a doubt, I felt like that record was important for the culture, important for my career. I was on top of Kanye West every day like, yo, what's up? Let me get that beat. You know what I'm saying?
Explain. You heard the beat first?
I heard the beat first. Kanye came to my session. This time I met Kanye. He came looking for Mos Def. Mos Def wasn't there that day. He was like, I got some beats. I said, play some beats. Every beat he played was crazy. Mm-hmm. I hadn't felt that way since I met Hot. You know what I'm saying?
Cincinnati in the house.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. Yo, this is, how are you amateur, but these beats is this level
right.
of quality.
Right.
And then he told me that he did records with Derek Angeletti, and he did records on Beanie Siegel album, The Truth, and all that. And I'm right. like, the reason, I'm like, those is my favorite joints.
Right.
Like, okay,
right.
so you've done a lot of my favorite joints from right. dudes. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then he gave me Gorilla Monsoon Rap, Good right. to You, all those records he gave. And,
wow.
and we didn't have Get By. He played me Get By, the track for it. And I was like, man, this is beautiful. And he was like, this beat, I'm holding it. Mariah Carey wants this beat.
Wow.
Pharrell Monch wants this beat. There's a lot of interest in this beat. So I'm not sure. So for like a month, I was calling him every couple days, like, what's up with that beat? What's right. up with that beat? And after like a month, I really, really, really stayed on him about that right. track. Because right. I remember hearing it, I was like,
that's it.
You knew.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then it was like the gospel. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, we need some gospel.
Right.
You know, and Kanye wanted to put the Harlem Boys Choir on it. We couldn't afford them. You know what I'm saying? He went and put them on his album, though. When he got some more money.
Right.
But you know what I'm saying, we couldn't afford them back then.
And I mean, that's if you don't know that song, Get By, Talib Kweli, produced by Kanye West. The song, the remix, there's such a
the flow.
Like when you hear a beat like that, do you know, like, I want this to be an uplifting song? Is this happen organically, or like you hear it and you're like, How does that work from a musician's point of view? Like, are you like, you hear the beat, you're obviously in love with the beat, and then are you like, is it just, are you like, I want this to be a positive, uplifting song? I'd say uplifting. It's like an uplifting song.
Yeah, that wasn't my intention when I first heard the beat. When I first heard it, it just felt good. And the whole Get By refrain, like the hook, this morning I woke up, Kanye wrote that.
Mm.
He was like, yo, this should, I was like, just to get by, just that. As soon as I heard the beat, that's what I heard.
Mm.
So I heard just to get by. So I was like, I wrote around that. Around just to get. That's why the first verse is, I go back to that in the first verse a lot. Just to get by. I
right.
say that like a few times in the first verse.
Right.
When I laid that basic idea, Kanye sang that hook.
Mm.
This morning, I had a version for a couple months with just Kanye singing the hook.
Wow.
Doing all the parts. Ah, he was doing all the parts in there. He laid that out.
Where are the tapes of that, man? You got
somewhere, I don't know. But then we had to shout out to Kendra Ross.
Right.
A good friend of mine. She came through, and we right. had the singers, Chinua Hawk. And
when you did Get By with Kanye, before he was a beast, huge star as he is now. He's a monster star.
Rock star.
Would you ever have suspected, I mean, somebody in hip-hop to get so big, so famous, and like, it's like, you know, like that Biggie lyric, you know, it's not just him. I never thought that hip-hop would take it this
right,
far.
Right.
Like, I always think about when I see Jay-Z at like these places, I'm like, This is a first. He's first generation.
Yeah. yeah, yeah.
Like, he came up behind Kane. He's been there from the inception. So I trip out when I see.
That's what I'm talking about.
Like, his success, I'm not surprised by it, but I'm just like, the enormity of a hip hop star.
From where it came from,
like from
Rocking
like Biz Markie, or like, you know, guys like Sean Price, or like
right.
guys like Black Moon, or right. I mean, you can name some. But then like Jay-Z's like surpassed all of it, and Kanye's sort of in the same world. Would you ever have imagined he'd become this sort of this figure? He's like beyond hip hop now. It's like this figure.
You want the honest answer?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
You did. You
and you know why I did?
Why?
Because. And this is all, everything I'm saying is true talk.
Real talk.
He said he was. Everything that you see Kanye West doing, back then he said it. He said, I'm going to be the biggest rapper ever in the world. I'm going to change the game. I'm going to do fashion. I'm going to design sneakers. I got this song called Jesus Walks. It's going to be on my second album called College Dropout. This is before called Late Registration. This before he even had a deal for College Dropout.
Wow.
He was telling me the singles.
Are you serious?
He told me everything that Kanye did from the time he was on tour with me to, you know, 808s, like everything. I was a manifest destiny.
He had it mapped.
He said every single thing. The only thing I think that he didn't have mapped out was the accident.
Of course.
But when that car accident happened, that's what set his career off. Because when the car accident happened, he did Through the Wire. Through the Wire, he took it to Dame Dash, and then they was like, that's cool, it's a mixed show record. took it to Def Jam. That's cool. It was a mixer record. Kanye West went and paid for a video, you know, because he was making rap money at that point,
right,
producing.
Right.
Went and paid for the video, and then went and paid for video promotion, and went paid for single promotion.
All on his own.
All on his own. Kanye paid for that on his own.
Wow.
So his first single, Through the Wire, he self-promoted it. Like, nah, this is a hit. I don't care what y'all say.
Right, right.
Okay.
And from that point, and then 6 months later, he performed it on the Grammys with Chaka Khan.
Wow. That's big time. All right.
That's
okay.
Working.
That, yeah, you know, you forget about that.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, for me, I find his persona and the music, it's like church and state. It's like, first of all, like, I think the music in general, I think all across the board, the music, the hip-hop music, I'm so concerned about the actual music.
The funk is gone.
I have no agenda. I don't rap. I'm not in the music business. I don't own any stake in any music business. I'm just a fan. It means so much to me in my blood cell level.
Word.
And when I see where it's going, it concerns me. It bothers me. And I feel like guys like you, Mos Def, Jay-Z, Kanye, Q-Tip, the guys that are still relevant, that are still talented and still have a responsibility to sort of balance it, because what's going on now, it's going to turn into, I think we're already at hair metal.
We
were at hair metal 20 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Rap was like heavy, rap was like WWF 20 years ago. I said in the lyric.
Then what are we now?
Same thing, just a little bit more refined for the internet generation. I think Drew will agree with me. When you write, artists have a certain responsibility, but artists are influenced by the same factors in the culture as the average fan is. I think the responsibility here is the fans and the consumers. I think people vote with their dollars. You know, I think you have victories. You have J. Cole going platinum, same as Taylor Swift, and then doing HBO shows and doing selling mm-hmm. out Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. You have Kendrick Lamar winning 11 Grammys.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have music that we, as a certain age and from a certain region, didn't grow up on. We didn't grow up on the sounds, on the Louisiana bounce sounds or the club sounds that was in Atlanta back in the day.
Right.
And now what you see is that Atlanta is the hotbed for hip-hop music, whereas it used to be New York. At one point, it was the West Coast.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? At one point, it was Snoop and Dre and them in the Death Row era. It was like, you had to sound like you was from West Coast to be hot. Now you got to sound like you're from Atlanta. The strip club culture and the DJs and the way the industry is and the fact that the South is bigger than New York. If you think about New York hip-hop, people who love New York hip-hop, we had a, besides creating it, which we always get props and credit for, we have to, besides creating it and sustaining the culture for years before anybody got into it, we had eras. We had the Biggie era. We had the Nas and Wu-Tang, and there were certain eras and that everybody respect, but it only goes, besides EPMD, who's sampling funk records, like Dr. Dre and them, a lot of that stuff only went from New York, Baltimore, Connecticut, Virginia, the tri-state area, like the East Coast.
Yes.
Down south. When you talk down south, you're talking Miami all the way to Arizona. Houston.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're talking Arizona. All of that. You're talking Alabama, Mississippi, yeah. North Carolina, South Carolina.
So there's more.
There's a lot more radio stations. Think about all the A, B, and C radio stations in those areas.
That makes sense.
Areas. And then that music. And then New York. And New York shut it out for a long time. So they had to develop their own industry. Now they have their own star.
Right.
They have their own industry. They own systems and payola.
Right.
They own things. So now a record like a Young Jeezy might come out of nowhere to a lot of people in New York, but really he was already selling out venues with mixtapes. Yeah.
Does it frustrate you as somebody that is a Brooklyn MC and is identified as a Brooklyn MC with that voice, that flow? Does it frustrate you, concern you? Am I a lone wolf with my concern and my hair pulling that sound is gone?
Nah, because I mean, I heard a new Joey Badass record that felt like, you know, there's a lot of people out there doing it. It's there, but the way that we receive music,
I know that's changed.
It's different. That's all it is. Like, the music you like used to be marketed to you. You know what
I'm saying? The craftsmanship, to me, mm-hmm. like there's a lot of really good MCs. To me, the production value, the craftsmanship of a Guru, of a Premier, of a Pete Rock, of a Large Professor, of a Q-Tip,
Evil D, Mr. Walt,
as of the De La guys, the whole clique in terms of the you know, whoever was putting together which beat. We don't want to start any sort of, you know, every group has their. I made the beat, so the De La Collective, the Tribe Collective, You know, we got Drew Hawk coming on next for the Duck Down. I'm finally going to ask him, where?
Well,
where was the Black Moon record? I waited and waited and waited. What happened? The first one was so good. Talk about perfect record.
Hell yeah.
It still didn't come out.
Yeah, the second one.
I'm still waiting for it.
I'm like a crazy
wild rabid Jew here. Where's my Black Moon record? It's like it's me and Bernie Sanders. I love them too.
Yeah.
They were fantastic. That Buckshot Shorty was it was great.
Buckshot's still great. Buckshot be on stage like a rock star.
Yeah.
He's a bad one.
I don't know where Buckshot, this rant talking.
Buckshot is a rock star.
But am I alone with this quality? Like don't like
No, you're not alone. Because, your sentiment
because
is very
there's no record sales.
Right.
Even the biggest of the biggest barely sells any more records. Why not just make the record that you think is the dopest?
Word.
I think a lot of people are doing that.
I don't think so.
Nah, I don't hear that shit on the radio.
What? Stop listening to the radio.
Oh, wait, I don't.
I got my daughter. She loves that. So how?
Well, then she's supposed to. Right. She's supposed to have her own thing. You older, you're supposed to be like, that's not as good as when I grew up.
Listen to this.
Because you know why? Let me tell you why. When you were a teenager or college age, what you were listening to was attached to your personality. It was attached to your identity.
Right.
You're like, I'm this type of person because I listen to Nas.
Right.
And you're growing as a person. You're learning yourself. You know what I'm saying? So that music, and it also is attached to nostalgia. It's attached to, not to, you know, we all have great times, but it's attached to, in many people's lives, the best times of their life.
Your experiences.
Your experiences. Yeah. And it's based on your emotional level when you heard that song. It's based on where you grew up at.
Right.
And your influences. So you got to figure all that. So your daughter's not the same. She grew up with a whole different set of influences.
Right.
And guess what's going to happen to your daughter? When she's 40, 45, 50, she's going to tell her kids, yo, you think that's hot?
The Fetty Wap period was...
Fetty Wap was cracking. That ain't no Fetty. That shit is fake Fetty Wap.
And what do we say about Fetty Wap?
I like Fetty Wap.
We say he's the special ed kid that made it big.
I like Fetty Wap. I like that 679. I like a lot of Fetty Wap records.
What?
I like Fetty Wap a lot. I think he could rap. And he does that singing thing. Yeah, sometimes it sounds like...
A retard. I just got to say it.
While he's like... This is the I Am Rapaport Stereo Podcast.
That's what we do.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I've heard it before.
All right, politics. Yo, your man Donald Trump.
That's your man.
D. Trump.
That's your man.
Doesn't he sound like a drug dealer from like the 90s? Like, yo, D. Trump's coming. Yo, he going to come.
He sounds like a supervillain, a billionaire supervillain in the movies, like in The Muppets. They had a dude named Tex Oil Man or something like
that. Right. Like it's like
he's like a supervillain from a Superman movie.
And he looks like a supervillain.
He's Lex Luthor.
Right.
Yeah.
He got the OG.
Gene Hackman.
Yeah, he's the Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman in Superman 2.
Yeah.
So you've been sort of, you know, you put yourself out there and sort of, you know, now you're one of the people that you have a voice in politics. You know, like,
okay.
You know, I seen you on Bill Maher dropping knowledge, right?
Yeah, shout out to Bill Maher.
Check Don Lemon,
your man Don Lemon.
BK, yo.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that is that
that was crazy.
You know what happens to me?
I was like, yo, Quali's on CNN.
Yeah, you know what happens to me since then?
People tell on Don Lemon to me then. Like, people snitch on him. Like, whenever he fuck up, because he do a lot, whenever he do, my Twitter feed blow up.
Right.
Like, I know Don Lemon. Like, I know Don Lemon fucked up.
That was
when my Twitter, they be like, yo, you see your boy? You see what Don Lemon? And they tell on him to me.
That was a great moment in Black America.
Explain the moment. Explain
that's a Black History moment.
Articulate what happened there, Quali, and what happened, and like, were you kind of like, when it sort of blew up for the next few days, and you know, everything is so instantaneous, and Twitter and Instagram.
Like, well, honestly, you know,
where were you? What was it for the people who didn't see it?
First of all, rest in peace to Mike Brown.
Yep.
Word.
Because Mike Brown, along with Trayvon Martin and Tamir Rice and Sandra Bland and Rekia Boyd and all these people who we've now seen and we have a lot more information and data about their deaths, it spurred people to action. Yep. You know what I'm saying? And Mike Brown's situation was interesting because the police clearly murdered this boy, 17 years old, left him in the street for 6 hours, left his body. The Department of Justice went into the Ferguson Police Department. They found a history of racism,
like
not just average cop beats you up racism, but
fleecing the citizen.
Yeah, like for money.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Racism for profit. So it was a whole different situation.
Word.
And so the people of Ferguson were not activists. They were working class people and students and people in the neighborhood who just were shocked
right
at this tragedy and this this systemic oppression. It was shocking to them, even though they lived in a place they've been living under that. But that's what it was. It was the straw that broke the camel's back.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? So I was talking on social media about how you can't just tweet, how you can't just do Facebook posts, how you have to be there in the street. I was praising the people of Ferguson, but it was ironic to me that I was talking about that on social media. And I had to really assess my situation. I'm like, I'm an entertainer, which means I determine my own schedule. So there's no excuse for me to not
be there.
Be there if I'm saying people should be there.
Right, right. Right.
And then J. Cole, it's funny. Then J. Cole went, and he called me.
You know went to the
Ferguson.
Yeah.
Like J. Cole went before me. I think Young Jeezy went before me too. So I'm not the only MC who went.
Right.
Benzino was down there. I seen Benzino marching in the street with the people.
Oh, word?
You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, but so I went and I was determined to not do press. That was I was like, I'm not here as a rapper, as
right.
a celebrity, I'm
right.
here with the people. So people was asking me to do press the whole time. After I was there for the first night I was there, I got pinned on the ground by the cops.
Did you really?
Oh yeah, it was crazy. Like the cops put up their gear. You know what I'm saying? They rushed the people. They ran. They were like, get them. They were trying to arrest people. It was me, Jessica Camore, Rosa Clemente. They threw us on the ground, put rifles in my chest.
Are you serious?
Yeah. This happened the first night I got there. Yeah. First night I got there.
Were you scared?
Yeah, I was.
Because that's beyond
how. He had my life and my body in his possession. Right. And he could decide.
You felt that.
He could decide at any moment. Like, I had the rifle right here.
Right. He jumped.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Shit.
And
this is tradition.
That's wild.
And so when that happened, and then the people who I was with all got arrested. You know what I'm saying? So I couldn't leave. You know right. what I'm saying? My plan was to go for one night. I was like, I'm going to go. I'm going to be out there with the people. Everybody going to see me.
Right.
I'm going to tweet about it. Then I can say I went.
Right.
And I'm going to go back to going to work.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But after that, I stayed. And I was there for a few days. I did an interview with Democracy Now, which is a great, great outlet. People should check out democracynow.org. I did an interview with Joanne Reed because I respect what she do on MSNBC. And then I was done. But then CNN kept calling.
Okay.
I ignored their calls. Corey Smith, you know, my ex-manager, I hadn't heard from him in months. Called me like this lady called me from CNN. Calling.
So shout out to C. Smith.
Yeah, shout out to C. Smith. So I went and did it. And yeah, Don Lemon just was, you know, he was
got on some sucker shit.
Yeah, I just wasn't. Yeah.
He started talking greasy.
Yeah.
He was talking froggy a little.
Yeah,
bit.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. So.
But you know, he said to me after that exchange, and the people could Google it and watch it for themselves. But he said to me, you know, this is gonna go viral, right? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because he knew. I think he knows.
Right.
What buttons to push.
Right?
You know what I'm saying? Like,
so it wasn't personal to him, it was business.
It wasn't personal to him. I don't think it was.
Right. He knows what time it
is. I don't think it was personal to him.
Do you know if he has his hair? Does he brush his hair forward or backwards? Because I just a question.
I have no idea.
You know why I'm asking.
Shout out to Van Jones. Cause the whole time I was there, Van Jones was in the back like, stay. Cause I was finna leave. And Van Jones is the one who was like, stay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right. Bernie Sanders, Hillary, where are you at politically with these three guys and gals, these three people, these three candidates?
Well, there's a lot I like about Bernie Sanders. He's somebody who's not only do I like him as far as I agree with the vast majority of his positions, but I'm very impressed at his ability to still be in a race right now.
Right.
Yeah. Last year I was like, Bernie sounds good, but a socialist saying things he's saying, no one's going to take that seriously. And people took it seriously. And millennials took it seriously. They don't take it seriously enough for him to win any goddamn primaries.
You don't think he's going to win?
I think he's going to win? If I had to put money on it, no, I don't think.
So if that 100,000, you would say who's going to be the next president?
Hillary Clinton.
I think so, too.
That would be an easy bet for me.
I think so, too.
And that's not an endorsement of Hillary Clinton. That's not me throwing my support or voice behind Hillary Clinton. That's just me being observant.
Have you been asked to give? Because I gave my public endorsement of Bernie Sanders, and I thought like it would be like big news.
Are you a Bernie bro?
Yeah, wait. No one gave a shit about my endorsement. I didn't get like Michael Rappaport has finally given us an endorsement. No, like I had to tweet it, and then I retweeted myself.
Word.
That was it. That's the only like I thought like I was gonna get my end political because I just feel like this is what I like about Bernie.
I feel like if I sat down with him at the South by Southwest TuneIn Studios and I asked him to explain something to me, I would get an answer that was attainable and that was appropriately honest.
I agree with you.
And Hillary, I feel like, probably doesn't like little kids. And those kind of people always make me nervous.
And did you see her with that girl, with the Black Lives Matter girl?
Yeah.
With the Super Predator girl?
Yeah.
Oh, that was brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like I don't feel like she's a puppy person. You know, I feel like she, like, when her daughter, like, I feel like she won't be like, oh, just drop the grandkids off over the weekend. I don't feel like she likes small,
I think she's been hardened.
Yes.
By politics.
And Bill.
By being married to Bill Clinton.
He was freaking off. That'll hurt any lady.
And then being Secretary of State.
Yes.
Like, after all that, she went and was just, like, traveling the world, trying to push American interests. It was all around the world. You know, it was a very tough job.
Right.
I think she's older.
Right.
And hardened. You know what I'm saying? And she's had to weather a lot. As a woman, I have a lot of respect for Hillary Clinton. There's a lot of criticism out there about her that I think is accurate. Including some of the criticism that you just laid out. You know, and as a politician, I think I like Bernie Sanders better as a politician.
I have to agree. You know, the looming Bill Clinton back in the White House factor, I like that. The stability of that and the familiarity. Did I say that? How do you say it?
You got it.
Familiarity.
Don't even say it.
Familiarity. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Moody.
Now, here's my 2 cents.
Give your 2 cents, Mr. Moody.
If Hillary wins, it's going to be riots.
No, you say that.
Trump.
Trump.
He said it.
He also says steaks are going to sell good at the Sharper Image.
That's what he said. He's not always.
He also said, I don't trust the blacks with my money. I need the Jewish guys with the little hatch.
Did he say that?
Yeah. He also said all Mexicans are rapists. He also said we should vet all Muslims before we let them in the country. He also said, I love the blacks.
He's buck wild.
Now, how's he doing in the polls?
He's going to run for president.
He's sweeping shit. He's sweeping, yo.
He's going to run for president.
And if he doesn't get the nomination, he said, yo, it's going to be riots.
Well,
he's kicking that.
Well, then there's going to be a bunch of hipsters and you know, I
the fact that he says things like, if I don't win, there's going to be riots.
Right.
That's exactly why they're not going to give him the nomination.
Right.
And they're looking. Right now, the GOP is scrambling for any reason.
Right.
So all this shit that he's talking about the GOP, about Fox News, they're going to get him back for that. When the convention happens, they're going to be like, John Kasich, whatever his name is, or they're going to pick someone.
Right.
And then what they're going to say is, Trump is a bigot. He's too inflammatory. He doesn't understand simple, basic laws.
He cannot be.
He's not a true conservative.
Right.
He's friends with Hillary Clinton.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They look at his wife.
Right.
They're going to say all of that.
Right.
They're just waiting for the convention.
They're waiting. That's what I would say. I feel like they're just like, let this guy.
And then KKK motherfuckers going to be like, oh,
they're going to say that.
Oh, world.
And you know what? Their base is going to be upset.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to tear shit up.
And people might start tearing shit up. But that's going to just make them look bad.
Yeah.
Right. All right. We're going to go. Quali, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Where are we at tonight in South by Southwest? Where the party at? Yes. Where the performance is at?
Where that boom bap music at?
I'm going to Club Bed.
Okay. What's a club? Club Bed?
Yeah.
What's going on there?
DJ Pillow.
Okay. Club Bed, DJ Pillow.
Yeah.
Are you bullshitting?
I'm going to take a nap. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. 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 And then what? Then what?
And then I'm going to go to the Duck Down Sean Price birthday extravaganza.
Oh, we will
at the Austin Music Hall.
We're going to that too. Is it Nasty Nas performing?
I don't know. Ask Drew High.
I think Nasty Nas is performing. He's shutting it down. All right, yo, Quali, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it.
Brooklyn.
I hope you didn't take it as an insult when I said you were so on time.
Oh, no, I did not. I pride myself on punctuality.
Word. I mean, but rapper time. He told you
he wasn't a rapper.
I know that. I know that.
That's the mistake. People think I'm a rapper or something.
He's in South Africa, motherfucker.
I know. I'm just saying.
I am an international man of mystery.
Word.
That's my official job title. When I come back in the country and they say, sir, what is your occupation? I say, international man of mystery, ebony man, Apollo legend.
I'm sure that goes over real well with the TSA people. I'm sure
it
they're
does.
Like.
And you know what? They recognize me now, which is great.
They know.
I used to get arrested. Now they recognize me.
They give you a little shout out.
Now they be like, they say, you. Go ahead, man. Yeah. They used to be like, you right this way, sir.
As they
We're
should.
We're going to search you.
As they sure. should. Quali, sure. as they should let you through. All right, I appreciate you coming on the show here. And we'll be right back. Thank you, Quali.
Thank you.
I Am Rappaport podcast is sponsored by Casper Mattresses, Casper.com. It's an award-winning sleep startup. Go to Casper.com, $50 off purchase of any size mattress.
Damn.
Put in the code Rappaport, R-A-P-A-P-O-R-T, Casper Mattress in New York City. You could keep the bed for 100 nights. You could get your freak on for 100 nights. If you do not like the bed after 100 nights, you can return the mattress within 100 days. That's a guarantee. The bed will be delivered between 2 to 5 days anywhere in the United States and Canada. Same day delivery in New York City. We do not plug. We do not support. We do not take sponsorship from anything we have not tried and we are not passionate about. 450%.
Capadonna, what up?
What's good, Cap?
Everything is everything, man. I'm chilling right now, you know? South by Southwest style. What's good?
Yo, where are you at?
Right now, man, I'm all over the place, man. I'm out in Austin. You know what I'm saying? I'm out in Sequin. I'm doing my shuffle down in San Antonio. I'm up in Starcrest. I'm moving and grooving, man. You know, shaking and baking. You dig?
No, yes. The great. So, Cap, what's going on in the wonderful, wacky, incredible world of the Wu-Tang Clan?
Wow, the saga continues, man. Right now, me and Ghost was out here. We did a couple of shows. We hit Emo's up. We got the Wu World Radio things popping off. You know, Riz is in L.A. working on movies. Ray was just out there, too. He did his little Mexico thing. And me and Ghost stayed here. So we did like 2 shows.
Okay.
And I mean, come on, man. We just doing what we do. I just dropped a joint called The Pillage 2.
Okay.
I think the hook off joint that I dropped before The Pillage 2 is even better. It's the first hip hop album with no hooks. It's crazy action packed all the way through. Like,
I gotta check that out.
No doubt.
Raw hip hop uncut. War talent. You know what I'm saying? The whole Wu World Radio is here. We're live streaming. We're doing big things, and we do that every day at the hookah spot. So you can check us out over there. And, everybody's doing what we're supposed to do, man. We're working on a new album right now, and I think Ghost is going to spearhead this project right here.
Yo, good, man. Listen, man. Let me ask you a question, Cap. Yo, we're long time, you know, Wu fans and hip hop fans, and what are you excited about in the culture? What pisses you off? What disappoints you after you guys being in this for so long, 20 something years? First of all, did you ever imagine that it would be something that you would be doing? Pretty much, you're going to be doing this for the rest of your life. You're married to it, whether you guys like it or not. Like when you first started, did you ever think that 2016, you guys would still be rocking, still be relevant, still be people that would get everybody excited the way you still do collectively and as individuals?
It was beyond my comprehension that we would ever even make it as a rap group or make it as anything at that point, because we grew up on the crime side, the New York Times side.
No doubt.
So
staying alive was no job.
Yeah.
And staying alive, there you have it. So I didn't really see no kind of glory. I didn't see, you know, coming up in the project and going through the trials and tribulations, you know, you don't really have a lot of hope. So for us to even make it and it to be so many of us going through the same struggle at the same time and to make it at the same time, that's like one in a million, dude.
Right.
All my childhood friends, those are all my childhood friends. We literally grew up together. I mean, from school, from playing in the park, from our mothers knowing each other and babysitting each other. Mm-hmm. That's how far back it goes. So, you know, when we made it like that and came together for one common accord, that in itself is a blessing and a gift. And it was crazy. I never in my wildest dreams would have ever thought that we would be the Wu-Tang Clan. As far as the condition of music today, I'm looking at it like it's a little saturated, it's a little watered down, but at the same time, music is evolving, and it's going to continue to evolve. We were the Thug Fizzles coming up at that time.
Right.
You know, we was raised on in the crack era.
Right.
So, yeah. So, yeah, our music, you know, defined that time. Now it's a little more loose. It's a little more Fruity Pebble-ish. And we, as the pioneers of hip-hop, owe it to ourselves to stir up some kind of foundation in that so that the little kids are not going towards, you know, femininity and you know, lust and hatred, envy and greed.
No doubt. Yo, Cap, that's what I'm talking about.
He summed it up.
Because for me, you know, the thing that concerns me with the music in general is that, you know, first of all, the record sales are done. You know, because the music business is so screwed up, the record sales are done. So, like, why not make the records that you're proud of, that you guys feel excited about, and that the fans, like, because, you know, like, Wu-Tang, the people that are still relevant, Wu-Tang collectively, all you guys, you know, as a collective and individuals, you know, you got Nas, you got Jay-Z, you got Q-Tip, you got guys that are still around that can sort of bring the dial back to that boom bap, to that hip hop, to that grimy sound. Because one of the things that was so special about all you know, for obviously 36 Chambers, and then, you know, all the first, second, and third albums that you guys put out is the musicality, the craftsmanship, and the musicality, and the craftsmanship that you guys and the seriousness that you all took as MCs. You know, now because of Instagram and Twitter and YouTube, anybody could just make a rhyme. And the next thing you know, you're on tour. You know, like for me,
exactly.
You know, it was like life and death. When you put out your first album, you knew if it was whack, you're going to be working at a grocery store, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you better believe it. You better believe it, man. And even with the Go album, I still experienced some struggle and strife. So, you know, for me to still be in the game and having experienced homelessness and cab driving and whatsoever and so forth, it was just a humbling experience to let me know that, yo, master your art or be torn apart, man.
Right, yeah. Right. Hey, let me ask you something. Did you see, I'm assuming you saw it, did you see the NWA film? And what would it take? I can't even imagine, because I think that whoever took it on might wind up in Bellevue. But what would it take to do a Wu-Tang film? You know, because whoever tried to take that on, listen, the NWA movie, I'm sure that was tough, but that was only four of them. You guys, there's so many. There's so many personalities. So what did you think of the NWA movie? And, you know, I'm sure you guys have been approached about a Wu-Tang movie. Do you think that would ever happen?
There's a great possibility, but we need we need counselors to come in. we need the whole social network to really come in, and this is going to be a village project.
Right, right.
Because I'm even thinking like bringing the same directors, if not directors, some of the casting people. Their expertise, not necessarily the people that they cast, but their expertise to the Wu-Tang movie, being that they already have a direction of what it looks like. Mm-hmm. So the people who did that Compton movie,
yep.
We probably need to bring them in along with Dr. Phil and the rest of them.
Yeah, you need Dr. Phil, you need Oprah, you need like a handful of people, you need specialist surgeons.
Oh my God.
Neurologists, you need people to make sure everybody's blood is checked and flowing, and you need dietitians. So let me ask you something before I let you go. What are you listening to? What does Capadonna the Great listen to? And you could say it might not even be hip hop. Yeah, I know you're listening to that old soul. Like, what do you listen to on a daily basis?
You already know. Look, you already know. Right. And you know what? That's what we all listen to, because that's what we grew up on. So The majority of the times when we on our tour buses and we moving and grooving and on them long flights all the way to Japan and Germany and all that, that's what we be listening to. The Harold Melvin and the Blue Nose, Four Tops, Spinning. It just goes on and on.
It's just
aside
like us.
From that, aside from that, we you know, we listen to a lot of tracks,
right.
Soulful
Beats,
tracks.
Right?
We listen to that, you know, them hard tracks, and at the same time, I mean, hey, listen, we do the hip hop thing too, but we like the hard and crunchy. Most of the time, when it come down to hip hop, that be me playing it on the bus.
Okay.
A lot of the brothers, you know, they be into, we'd be into different things. We're reading books.
Okay.
You know, Jizza reads a lot, and everybody just be into their social network and media thing. But, you know, I bring all of the, you know, the meditation, the spiritualism and prayers and all that into the game.
Okay, sure. Cap. Let me ask you a question. All over the world you guys have been. Have you been to every continent with Wu-Tang, Capadonna, and like your own stuff? Like, have you been all over the world, like, during this journey?
Well, no, I haven't been all over the world. I've been blessed and grateful to have been to some of the places I've been, like Japan and Russia and France and Rome and, you know, all of those places. I haven't been to South America yet, and I haven't been to Africa. I've lost
really?
My passport for like 12 years. I got it back for maybe 6 months. Somebody stole my luggage out the car. I just got it back again. I just got it back again, like maybe two or three weeks ago, and I have not yet to get a stamp on it yet. So
okay.
I'm proud of that. I'm ready to flow again, and you know how it is, man. It's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. You dig?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. All right, this is the Happy Hour with Michael Rappaport. And we're out. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Live from the TuneIn tent.
Happy Hour.
The happiest of the happy hours. It's not just Happy Hour. It's the happiest of the happy hours. And we're out.
Word.